When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, heroes, and welcome to another exciting episode of One Shot. I'm Tracy Barnett, your host and narrator. Heroes, this week we continue with episode 3 of Pit Crawler. It's recorded on the right mics, it sounds crisp and clean, and it is a lot of fun. Things continue to get even more wild. So, let's not wait any longer. Let's get to the show.
So, you have gone to see Honch, and he's told you that there's rumours of a mysterious, well, soft, warm glow and pleasant crackling sound coming from the mountains that lie on the border between Skolarg's realm and the neighbouring realm ruled by Emborio.
Emborio.
Emborio, am I right? Is what Skolarg says.
I like the idea that Skolarg, like, every time he gets, like, what he feels is a solid burn against Emborio, like, has to put up a statue or erect some kind of monument of the time he totally dunked on this other wizard.
Yeah. I'm gonna say that Emborio, I don't know if this is actually going to come up in the game at all, but I feel like Emborio might be like the older brother or the older cousin of Skolarg, who, like, their parents and their grandparents, like the rest of the family, are just so proud of Emborio.
Yes. Yep. And, you know, Skolarg is a troubled wizard.
Hmm. Maybe he'll grow out of it.
They've been hoping that.
Yep. The realm itself is about a day's walk, like from where you are, kind of in the middle. It's about a day's walk to any of the edges.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call this a nice circular realm because it's easy. And Emborio's realm is kind of up to the northwest.
Okay.
Segment. You can get there on foot, or you can try and take a, what did we call them? A dermy taxi.
Mm-hmm.
But the dermy taxis really work best when they're in the middle of the realm. Coverage is patchier as it gets out towards the outskirts.
For sure, especially because, like, towards the middle of the realm, it's, like, more urban. So a lot of the smaller animals that these things need to run over in order to keep society functioning kind of gather there.
Yeah.
I feel like time is of the essence. I feel like we gotta do our darndest to take out a dermataxi as far as we can, and then if we're forced to make the rest of the way on foot, you know. It's probably also extremely dangerous to move around this countryside anyway, so.
Yeah. So I'm gonna make a luck roll. Mm-hmm. Now in Pit Crawler, where something could go one of two ways, I'm gonna take a d20 and I'm gonna ask you to say high or low.
Low, for sure.
Low. Okay, so the closer this, like, the lower this roll is, the better it is for you. Okay. You and Sarah hop on a passing sort of half cow, half giraffe, half eagle creature. And you manage to hook it, crawl yourself upwards. Unfortunately, you've happened to have got the one that's just kind of, like, going round the square. Like, yeah. there's a couple of blocks in the middle, and it's just going round and round those blocks over and over and over again. And you are so caught up in your conversation where Sarah's saying things like, you really need to stay away from him. I don't think that we should be paying too much attention to what he says. Like, Honch is not a part of this now. And you're kind of arguing back, and you don't notice that you're just going around the same place over and over and over again until you realize it's been a while, and your elephant is actually, it's not with you anymore.
Oh, no. Oh, that's very bad.
Yeah, I think we, like, realize that so much time has passed. Like,
hey, wait a minute, where's the elephant?
It's your elephant. I thought you were keeping hold of it.
I'm not responsible. That's what you spent the last 2 hours lecturing me about.
So the elephant's going to be probably somewhere within a few blocks, assuming nobody's taken it. Do you want to stick around and hunt for the elephant, or do you want to just make your way as quickly as you can on foot to the mountains?
So this comes to a real question of, does dirt value doing the job or caring for the reward that he got from Skellig more? Like, this is as close as dirt can get to a moral quandary. And I kind of think that the only way to settle this is rolling. So I'm going to roll a d20. I'm going to say high will be self-interest. That is going after this elephant. And low is going to be dedication to the job. And we'll just see how it goes. And I roll a 9. So that is, you know, I am petrified about something happening to this elephant, of it somehow getting back to Skellig, that he gave us this great, beautiful elephant and we lost it. Like, I'm spiraling on that, but it's like the only thing for it is to go quench this flame, is to do the work. And, you know, something that Dirt genuinely very believes is prosperity gospel. That is, if you work hard enough for your betters, good things will come to you in life. So the elephant will simply return if I can operate within meets expectation parameters.
Yeah, nice. Okay. And I should point out that what Dirt subscribes to is actually the prosperity gospel,
yes.
Which was a pamphlet / blog post that Skellig put out about a year ago.
Yeah, and a blog post is, of course, a bloated log that is posted into the dirt for everybody to read.
Cool. So you're going to make the hike up to the mountains. So this is obviously a very rocky country, as we've said, and it is very, very dark. There are glow stick glows, you know, so there's like lanterns used by glow sticks, but they do fade over time. So you might have sort of like an inflated frog hanging from somebody's misery hole, just sort of dangling, glowing the little blue from its eyes, an open mouth, but they do fade over time. So the further you get out from the center of town, the more dangerous it is to go. You're climbing up rocks, you are like climbing up mountains the further out you go, and as it becomes more rural, there is less and less light. There is a sort of moonlight, but it feels incredibly far off. Once a month, you do get an incredibly blazing full moon.
Ooh, like a full moon that is like a shimmering fire in the sky. I love it.
Yeah. And then nobody can sleep for the night, and crime goes up.
Yeah, the moon does scream.
Yeah.
That's another thing that we should mention, is it's like a big silvery fire, but that's because it's a bunch of souls coalescing in the sky and screaming a miserable song of those who are damned to float in the atmosphere.
But tonight is not that night. You make your way. Could you please make me a feat roll to see how your trek goes?
All right. Now, I would like to argue something very strange here, Sasha.
Okay, I'm excited to hear it.
Go along with me. I do think that I am using a piece of equipment to lower the difficulty of this roll. And the piece of equipment that I'm using is the taxidermy elephant, because normally I drag a humongous taxidermy elephant everywhere I go. So this is actually the easiest traveling has been in a very long time in Dirt's life.
Okay, so I'm going to lower the difficulty from a 9 to a 6.
Okay.
Because you are using the absence of an item. Yes.
Okay. I do, unfortunately, just roll a 4.
Okay, so you and Sarah do your best to pick your way through the mountains, but it is dark and the rocks here are incredibly jagged and sharp. And just as metal as Skullag can make them. So you are unfortunately going to be taking 1 point of damage. Mm-hmm. Just from scrapes and a twisted ankle and just the kind of accumulation of little bits of pain, little bits of falling.
Now that...
We see Dirt like kind of limping and like tying a bandage around one of his limbs.
That... is craftsmanship. We have the best rock sharpeners in any region of the world, and I would argue that to anyone. You go to any region, you go to Emborio's region, and the rocks there are dull as a doornail, I'd say. But these rocks here, they're sharp as razors, and that's something you only get from Skellig, who really cares.
Sarah will, like, look up from trying to buff out a couple of scratches on their armor. She'll be like, oh, absolutely. I mean, you can't fault Skellig for style. That's what I always say.
You are always saying that. Yeah.
I'm always saying it. Every morning I wake up, you can't fault Skellig for style. I brush my teeth. You can't fault Skellig for style. I like to say it on the hour every hour, hoping that, you know, sometimes he might pick it up with that special wizard hearing.
Yep. And, you know, you never know when you might start a rolling chant on that. Hasn't happened yet, but it could any day.
Well, I mean, we've got a little ways more to march. We could have a bit of a marching song. You can't beat Skellig for style. You can't beat Skellig
for style. You can't beat Skellig for style. We'll align on it later. Yeah. I'm sure we'll work on it. We're new to chanting. That's fine.
So as you come to the kind of the peaks of the mountains, you can start to see over into Emporio's region. Where Skellig's region is dark and cold and has a kind of, where there is light, it's usually a sort of blue moonlight that screams. Mm-hmm. Emborio's region is, you can see kind of as soon as the peaks of the mountains hit and they start to descend on the other side, it is an incredibly bright, like, inferno of a realm. So this is like a light show of a domain, but
like lasers just blasting off everywhere.
Yes, but instead of lasers, it's like candle wicks or like rows of gunpowder that sparkle in like carefully laid spirals, like a fireworks show, essentially.
Oh, I like that a lot. I kind of like the idea that that's like a creature here. Like instead of a mouse, you see one of those like lines of black powder,
like caterpillars, but it's like a dynamite string.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And every time it like inches forward, it's just like little popping sparklers.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Showy.
And you can see there's kind of a network of caves in the mountains. So there are, as you walk along, you can see a couple of different entrances. One is absolutely your classic cave entrance, like round archway, looks like it goes quite far back. One is a sort of fissure which you would have to squeeze through. You would probably get in okay, but it might be a bit tricky for Sarah. Mm-hmm. And the other one is have you seen them on these horrifying videos? They're like a hole in the ground that you drop into.
Oh, wow.
So we are looking for a glowing cave.
And, like, we see this network of caves in front that, like, kind of all look like they have a different kind of glow.
Nice.
All right, well, this has got to be a puzzle of some kind, right?
Well, what's the puzzle? What's the logic?
Only worthy people should be able to complete a job that Skellig sets out for them. So, you know, logic dictates it cannot be the fisher, because you, being a knight, are clearly of higher status than me and wouldn't be able to fit in there. And so there's no worthy work to be won.
That makes absolutely perfect sense. Yep.
So then that brings us to the whole, like, the classic sort of round cave that goes far back a ways, or the infinity hole here in the ground. I gotta say, I think I'm gonna have to use my brain about this one. Gotta be real careful.
Well, I mean, that is one of your strong points.
So, all right, let's assess our equipment here. What do we got? We got a backpack to hold things. Inside my backpack, I've got my folding shovel. I've got my lantern. And I've got my spyglass. And there's sort of an empty spot on this kit list where our very expensive and irreplaceable elephant would be, but it's temporarily not with us. I think I'm going to use my spyglass to try and look into the classic round open mouth cave entrance and see what's going on in there.
Okay, nice. So you've got your spyglass and you can look into the pit. It's very, very dark, but you do also have a lantern.
That's true.
As we've established, in this world, there are no lanterns that are not also crackable animals.
Yes.
So what kind of animal is your lantern?
Okay. I want it to be a blobfish. That... One of those sad-faced little distended fish that come from the very deep ocean. So it's just this kind of wet sack. And I think one of the things that I'm learning kind of about this world, the necromantic energy for really efficient magic, like, this necromancy does kind of depend on misery and sort of moroseness in some way. And the death suffered by this blobfish had to be truly miserable, because it's brought up, you know, suffered from depressurization. Like, that's just nasty stuff. So that means that its lantern glow will just last a very long time.
Mm. See, the thing that I think about, if you've got a blobfish, like, we've established that people collect these carcasses by going and like getting roadkill or going off to find animals have died naturally, that sort of thing. But a blobfish would not be out on the road. It would not be lying in some pile of rocks. So it suggests that someone went to get this specifically and gave it to you. So that suggests to me, like, Honch went specifically to get you this blobfish.
Oh, I like that too. Because, like, it is like kind of a beautiful metaphorical gift that understands dirt to his core, because the blobfish is meant to be to the deepest, darkest depth of the bottom of the sea. But this blobfish believed in itself and knew
and
that it
rose.
Could rise above its station and
land.
Did and suffered a horrible, horrible death in an environment it was not meant for.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah, so you can crack your blobfish and...
makes the worst, squelchiest noise.
kind of shine it down while you look through your spyglass. So looking down, you can see this is quite a drop, but it's it kind of turns almost into a slide, if you will. So the tunnel gets a little bit narrower, but also stops being vertical and just becomes this kind of like steep slide, maybe a story down. So you could drop it and survive, definitely. The tunnel that it kind of leads to does look like it will be big enough to fit you and Sarah, but you don't know, like you can't see where it leads or how far it goes down.
Okay, so caves. You know, I'm going to say, not much of a cave person myself. Don't explore many caves. Now, I have heard the name for cave explorers is a spelunker. Have you heard this, Sarah?
Yeah, I think I've heard that, yep. Spelunking.
Well, that's the other part of the riddle, isn't it? What sound would you make if you dropped into a hole?
Splunk!
That's it!
Amazing! Oh, this is why I'm always calling you dirt brains.
And why I truly deserve to be called that.
Great, so Sarah is convinced. Do you want to go first, or does Sarah want to jump in first?
I mean, logically, you'd want the lighter person to drop down onto the heavier person, but, you know, we are working with dirt brains here. So Dirt is going to jump in first and have that be followed by Sarah.
Okay. So you drop into the hole. You just, like, go feet first, just fully gung-ho about it. Mm-hmm. And you do have a drop, which is kind of like, if you were getting sleepy, this is a wake-up, but it's pretty safe. You are then immediately caught, and it does feel like going down a slide, like a sort of like a water slide, but without the water. It twists and it turns and it gets steeper and then less steep and then steeper and then steeper and then steeper and eventually deposits you.
Dirt is determined not to enjoy this ride because this is classic Emborio, like, showy flourish nonsense. So, like, it's going on this almost amusement park-esque journey for us two, and the whole time he's got his little arms folded, just determined not to have a good time. Mm.
So you are very much, like, the hole is still in Skellig's realm. But okay. By the time you've gone down the slide, there's enough twists and turns that you don't know which realm you're still in. Oh. So I kind of like the idea that Dirk can still be very much like, well, this is obviously Emborio, whereas Sarah is just like, whee!
I think, like, we're both bought in, so we are trying to sense, like, which portions are definitely Skellig and which portions are Emborio. So, like, there'll be portions where, like, our arms are folded, we're just looking very grumpy, and other portions we're like, yay! Yeah. And we're just wavering back and forth throughout the ride.
I'm going to make a luck roll for how you land, so could you tell me high or low?
Definitely low.
You come landing on, this is definitely Skellig's realm, because as you land, it's like a grater of sharp little rocks, and you will lose one more health point.
Oh, thank goodness we landed on these safely sharpened rocks. Could you imagine if we had ended this journey in Emborio's realm and landed on unsharpened rocks? The cuts wouldn't have been as clean.
We might have landed on, like, ash or something, and then my armor would have got all dirty instead of just scratched up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad that we landed where we landed. Just picking shards out of my flesh.
You are now in, it's kind of like a large chamber. The floor is, like, very jaggedy, but if you're very careful about it, you can pick a way through the, like, they're like tiny, tiny which one's stalagmites and which one's stalactites? But the ones that come from the
floor. Tites are on the ceiling, mites are on the ceiling.
Right, so there's mites and tites all around, but they are not quite meeting. So you have to very carefully pick your way, like ducking here and walking over there. but you both can make it through. There are a couple of different, three different tunnels leading off, one to the right, one to the left, and one straight ahead.
Right, left, or straight ahead? We've clearly entered the right place. We are absolutely cut to ribbons on the good sharpened rocks of home.
Mm-hmm.
I say that means if we're on the right path, we just got to go straight forward, directly ahead. That is the message that is being communicated to us by Skellig.
Okay, so you go straight ahead and you find yourself in a tunnel that looks, it doesn't look like it's been built exactly, but where the chamber that you were just in looked very much geologically fashioned, mm-hmm. This one has smoother walls. It looks much more like practical tunnel that somebody might be walking through, you know? You can follow it. It goes kind of twists and turns, but always keeping on the same path until you get to another chamber, this time, which looks like it's still as a chamber. It still looks very much like organic. It is a cave, mm-hmm. but up in one corner, you can see there's some glow sticks in the ground. And by glow sticks, I mean snakes on sticks.
Yep.
And in the middle of them, there is a bedroll and a bundle.
Hello, heroes, and welcome to the midroll. Heroes, I've got a treat for you this week.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is it. This is the midroll. There's not a whole lot to talk about. Happy Pride. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Bedroll in a bundle. Halt! Sarah, this could be dangerous. There could be enemies about.
I would like to look at the bedroll and bundle. And, you know, my first thing that I'm trying to assess and make sure of is that this is somebody who would be working for Skellig. Does this have, like, the classic goth accoutrement that I would be familiar with from my home region?
Oh, okay. So there's nothing overtly goth about this bundle. It's kind of plain in terms of colors. It's like neutral colors, things that would blend in with a mountain environment. But on looking closer, you do see that it's actually quite good quality. So the bedroll is made of the finest rock bubbles. My brain's gone blank. But the bedroll is made of the finest packable mattress material. And the backpack itself, like, is clearly very well made, very sturdy. And you can see where it's been, like, scuffed on some rocks, but hasn't ripped.
Yeah, to keep things horrifying, I feel like the peak of bedroll technology is self-warming bedrolls, which is, like, flesh and blubber that is, like, still alive.
Oh, so, yeah, that is the most horrifying.
You crawl in, and it's quite warm. It's very pleasant.
Oh, you crawl in. It's a bag. You don't lay on it.
No. You don't. Of course not. It's like a flap. It's like getting in a kangaroo pouch.
And it's like, it's almost like a lip where you get in, I feel like. And also, I feel like for the full experience, it should be a weighted blanket. So there's, like, pockets stitched where just little bits of bone.
Mm-hmm.
It's still warm.
The bedroll slightly undulates at your touch.
Well, I mean, we gotta keep this, right?
Well, I mean, it looks like it does belong to someone.
Right.
Or if they come back for it.
Well, Sarah, let's think our way through this. Who deserves to have nice things?
Well, wizards.
Wizards first and foremost.
Wizards, friends and family.
Friends and family of wizards, of course.
And people who've worked really, really, really hard and have pulled themselves up from their bootstraps.
Yes, exactly. And people who have some form of noble birth or title, like knights.
Well, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. And I think if there were a knight who had, for instance, chosen not to strike with the rest of the pit crawlers and had in fact gone to work, I think that that would be doubly deserving of a bedroll like this.
And this is all part of the prosperity gospel.
You're absolutely right. This is exactly what Skullhawk said. He was talking about it. He was saying, if you never ask for better wages, never ask for a break, never ask for more than 4 hours sleep a night, you will get good things. It's happened. These are the good things, because he's never given them to us, and I wouldn't expect him to. So we must get the good things another way.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is all part of his will.
All right, well, I guess we'd better bundle it up.
Yeah, I'd like to shove, like roll up this sack, which I have to imagine sounds horrible to roll up.
Oh, it sounds squelchy, but it actually feels so soft.
Yeah.
Like this is moisturized skin.
Yeah. It's beautiful, dewy skin, but mm-hmm. like there's a lot of trapped air and whatnot that is escaping when you're rolling it up. But we do manage to get it down into like a manageable sausage shape. And for, you know, even though it's like flesh and blubber, it's actually like lighter than you would expect. And we can fit.
Well, there's no muscle in there.
Mm hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So it's kind of easy to get into the bag.
And I guess all that's left is this other backpack to peruse through.
Would you like to open the backpack?
Oh, yes, I would.
Yeah? Okay. So you open the backpack. I'm going to ask you to tell me high or low.
Low. Always low. It's got it. I'm owed it at some point.
Okay, so you open the backpack, and as soon as your fingers go to the straps holding them down,
uh-huh.
The straps themselves undo of their own volition and instead wrap your fingers up and hold them there. Could you please take me one more health point damage as okay. it squeezes and one of your fingers kind of slightly snaps.
Ah! 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 Oh! It's
oh
it's
my god! Oh tight. My god! What the? What was that?
The bag is alive somehow.
Sarah draws their sword and sort of like waves it at the bag. Once this has happened, it sort of the bag kind of almost goes back to sleep. The pressure eases a little, and you can remove your hands.
Okay. Dirt kind of furrows his brow, looking at this bag.
There's some sort of security device on it. You know what that means?
Whoever owns it has heard of thieves.
Wow. Did not think I was going to say that means there's something very valuable inside.
Oh, right. No, yeah, you're right.
And this bag, you can see there's some leather on it. You know what that means? Good eating. I'm going to eat this bag.
You're going to eat the bag. Okay. I think that's going to be a heart roll.
Okay. And I would like to argue for an expertise here with endurance.
Okay, I will give you that. So that's going to put your target number to eat the bag mm-hmm. at a 12.
At a 12?
Now, you can't put your heart into this because you're already using your heart
yep.
to do it in the first place.
And this
place.
Can only critically fail for me. So let's roll this d10 and hope that...
Oh, well, when you're just rolling your heart, it's not a critical failure. It's only when you're adding your heart to something.
Oh, only when you're adding. Okay. Yep. Fair enough. Ah, that is unfortunately a 7.
Oh. So you manage to pick up the bag, careful not to touch the straps, and you kind of start to chomp. But unfortunately, this leather's like really well treated, and it would take much better oral hygiene than dirt has to maintain sheep teeth strong enough to get through this bag. As you are trying to like chomp and chomp, the little drawstring of the bag, which has like a little metal bead on the end, just kind of like flicks itself at you, like whacks you in the head, and you'll take another point of damage, please.
Down to 3. Yeah. Dirt, like, sort of like curled in a ball around the bag and is just like gnawing at it.
It's just hitting you and hitting you and hitting you.
And like, I feel like it starts with Sarah like cheering Dirt on, and then like slowly there's like a couple minutes past where it gets sadder and sadder. And
it starts like, dirt, dirt, dirt. And at the end, it's like, dirt. Dirt, like pulling you away.
I've got him.
Dirt. But Sarab will eventually pull the bag off you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. You know, enough break. That was our break. And now we got to quench that flame. You know, now that we're refreshed and restored.
Right, well, that was invigorating. Yep.
That's a word for it. Yeah, invigorating.
So I should point out, because Sarah is a knight, what you can do is Sarah can take damage for you. So if you like, with that last one, we can say that Sarah was the one that got hit by the drawstring.
That's probably
while
wise.
Pulling it off you. So I've got Sarah here. I will mark a little point for Sarah. And they're now down to 2 points.
And that brings me back up to 4.
And that brings you back up to 4. Which is very good because you have lost your food source. So there's no healing.
Right. Yes, of course.
You left it on the elephant.
If I see another living thing, I will try to eat it.
So you can leave the backpack here, but you've got the bedroll.
Mm-hmm.
Which you've squashed into your own backpack.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. You've now got, there's 2 paths, one leading left and one leading right.
As the poets say, 2 paths diverged underground, surrounded by sharp rocks. We should take the path least traveled.
Well, I think that the path less traveled is probably, and Sarah kind of looks around and looks around, very clear that they're just making a random guess. This one? And points
that's
to the left.
It exactly.
Oh, nice. All right, yeah, this one then. And off you go to the left.
All right.
So you walk for a little while. It's maybe 40 minutes. Of just walking straight, and you feel like there's definitely points where you feel like you're going downwards.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to feel like the further down you go and the longer the walk, you start to realize you feel really warm.
Huh. God.
And your blowfish is looking a little dimmer. Like you can still see
Mm-hmm.
But the blowfish doesn't look quite as bright against the darkness as it did before.
Yeah. God. Oh, is it just me, or do you feel like somebody slapped a bunch of raccoons on the ground and thrown them on your back?
That is exactly how I feel. Yeah, I was just thinking those exact words.
It's a hot one. It's a hot one.
Oh, it's like somebody's turned the radiator on or something.
Yep. Yep, it's like there was some kind of wombat that had passed away and someone smacked it very hard and it just started radiating heat throughout the room.
Do you think it means anything, or?
Well, let's put our heads together, old pal.
What do we know about flames and fire?
Well, I know they are forbidden.
Yes.
I know they are forbidden.
I think that's all we know about flames and fire. So I cannot tell if straying closer to a heat source is the right or the wrong move. But we have committed to this path. And Skolog always says, you gotta see things through. Doesn't matter how hard the job is. You gotta see it through to the end.
Yep, that is exactly what Skolog says. You gotta see things through till the end. Leave me alone, you maggots. Oh, watch me jam to this track. I mean, that's most of it, really.
That's most of the things that we've heard Skolog say. So, with those little morsels of wisdom, I think we just push on. We push on towards the heat.
Okay, on you push. So you can keep walking for about another half an hour before you see, and it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter, before you see ahead of you, there is a chamber with a definite orange glow.
Well, that's glowing. I'd say that's glowing, right?
What looks glowing to me.
Okay, what we have to do, we gotta focus ourselves, we gotta become very silent, and see if we can hear a crackling sound that we would describe as pleasant.
So you can stay there very, very carefully, mm-hmm. very quietly, and you hear, well, you're not quite sure what pleasant is,
yeah.
but you hear a crackling sound that has a kind of hissing noise along with it.
Ooh, a crackle and a hiss. Okay.
Well, a hiss has to be pleasant. Does that sound right? If I say to you, a pleasant hissing sound.
Yeah, I would think of
yeah.
That sounds like it might be pleasant.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it means like rhythmic or intermittent.
Pleasant to me sounds so close to peasant. So like low-born, like kind of a low-born hiss.
Yeah, no, I see. So more like a...
Yeah. That's got to be what we're after. That's got to be what we're after. We got
to
quench...
This is why people listen to podcasts.
to hear people try and etymologically suss out alternate definitions for words.
And then demonstrate them as hisses.
I think that was the real success of the Magnus Archives was just the opportunities that you had to hear different kinds of hissing.
Yeah, you know what? I was astonished that we didn't win an award just for that. But turns out there is no award for best hiss in podcasting.
There's no category for best hissing, which shows like that we are still in the infancy of podcasting awards. And,
I dream of the day where there's best hiss, best crunch, mm-hmm. best bone cracking sound.
Best squelch.
Oh, then we'll know we've made it.
But yeah, I think yes. with that... Dirt is going to like cautiously approach this glowing to try and search the room for potential dangers and most importantly, potential profit.
Okay, so as you and Sarah come around, there's like a sort of corner. You can come around the corner and it does not take much surveying of the room. As you come in, you can see... It's quite a large, it's like hexagonal shaped room. There is a lava sort of little moat with a couple of little bridges around.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of one north, one south, one east, one west. Little rock bridges over. And in the middle, there is a fire elemental. So there is a humanoid figure made of flame, this incredibly bright orange glow. Around, like, there's still shadows at the edge. It's just incredibly bright where this figure is.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can see there's a doorway off to your, right. And right there, there is another figure standing in front of it. Like, ooh, just at the bridge.
Like, what kind of figure? Like, I know one is a fire elemental, but...
Yeah, so that figure is a human. Mm. They are kind of small, kind of scrawny, you would guess, maybe a teen, and they're wearing like a robe, not quite a cloak, like a little bit fancier than a cloak.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a hood, but it's clear that, like, to you as a person who actually uses clothes, it's clear that the hood is really more of a decoration.
Gotcha.
Like, it's a very fine fabric, so it wouldn't actually keep any rain out or anything like that. And they have with them, like, a sword, but it's a very thin sword, and they don't really look like they know what they're doing.
Are they, like, facing down the fire elemental?
They are currently facing the fire elemental and have their sword drawn. The fire elemental has noticed them and currently has its back to you, but they're not yet, like, engaged in combat or anything like that.
Okay. Does it look like this sword is drawn, pointed towards the fire elemental? Like,
the sword is drawn,
mm-hmm,
and it is pointed towards the fire elemental, but the person holding it looks a little bit unsure. Like, they're holding it kind of outwards, and it is pointed towards the fire elemental, but it's not in, like, a combat stance. They look a little bit unsure at the moment. Neither of them have noticed either of you enter the room.
Okay. Okay. You know, we enter Dirt's Mind Palace, which, you know, looks like a maze in kind of a dark and dingy laboratory condition. And Dirt is represented by a little lab rat that is navigating, trying to find the cheese of an idea. And it scrabbles about this maze and, you know, passes certain facts here. We have a fire elemental. I have never seen fire in my life, but I do have knowledge of history and, like, the wars that took place between Emborio and Skellig's realms. So, like, I know the old battle songs. So, like, I know what fire elemental is, and I know, like, kind of historically how they were fought. I also pass, you know, my appreciation for social hierarchies and sheer love of wealth, and believe that if you serve wealth and power, it will reward you in turn and in kind. And sizing up this person in a fine cloak, I go, that's a rich kid. That's gotta be a rich kid. That's not a wizard. That's at least a friend and family of a wizard. And, like, you know, anything to do with fire is, you know, Emborio's and therefore must be bad. So Dirt approaches the cheese of a plan. And what this is, Dirt is going to attack this fire elemental. He's going to attack this fire elemental in the way that he has learned from the ancient battle songs, which is snuffing it out with dirt. So I happen to have a shovel. And
yes, you do.
I have my knowledge of history and how these things would be fought. So I kind of feel like with those two items, I should be able to grab some of the soil or whatnot from the cave and just start piling it on this fire elemental very quickly.
Okay, nice. Yeah, so you take out your backpack, you open it up, you take out your folding shovel, and, like, really quickly, but also, like, trying to be really subtle about it.
Mm-hmm.
You are, like, furiously screw together your shovel and, like, dig. And do you want to try to get closer at all to the fire elemental before you try flinging the dirt? Or do you want to try just flinging the dirt from where you are?
I think I'm going to, sleight of hand wouldn't count for getting closer. So, yeah, you know,
it might for flinging it.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We'll do that. So I'm flinging it. I'm using my sleight of hand. I am using my knowledge of history and my shovel. And I guess this has to be fists, right?
Yes, it does. So I'm actually going to say that what you've got here is something called the upper hand. So ordinarily, you've got the fire elemental. You'd be rolling fists, I'd say, to actually... Ordinarily, you would be rolling fists, but I think because... Wait, your fingers is really bad, isn't it?
Oh, truly awful.
I'm going to let you roll fist. So yeah, okay. This is a fist roll. Ordinarily, you'd be rolling fists and you'd be needing to get a 15. But
okay,
because you've got this plan, you've got the shovel, which is going to lower it by 1 to 12. You've got the sleight of hand expertise, which is going to lower it again to 9. And I'm going to say because you are surprising it with something that puts out fire, mm-hmm. you've got the upper hand, which means that you can choose whether to lower the difficulty one level again to make it a 6, or you can choose that if you do hit, you do an extra point of damage.
I've got to choose lower it again because mm-hmm. I am rolling a d6. Okay. And that's my
And don't forget, you can
success.
Put your heart into it. Oh my goodness! I've just realized I completely forgot to explain about thumbs, which is one of my favorite mechanics in Pitcrawler. So,
I can't wait to hear this. Thumbs?
Okay. Thumbs. Well, it just hasn't really been relevant yet, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
You know how when you're reading a Choose Your Own Adventure book,
right.
you can leave a finger in a page, like mm-hmm. you make a choice, but you put your finger there. So if it doesn't go how you want, you flick back and choose something different. You can do that in Pitcrawler. So at the start of any adventure, the adventurer chooses how many thumbs they want between 0 and 5, because that's how many fingers you have on one hand.
Right.
At any point, you can choose to put down one of your thumbs. And if it doesn't go the way that you want, you can then go back to that point and choose to do something different.
Oh, I like that. A little bit of Groundhog Day energy there. That's fun. I love this. We'll put a thumb here on this decision yep. because I'm kind of risking it all. And I gotta put my heart into it because, you know, I'm representing Skolog here. Like, I've gotta show these fire elementals that we mean business. Okay. Oh, thank goodness. All right. That is an 11. So
okay. So you made that. So you describe to me how does dirt attack this fire elemental with the shovel and the dirt?
So I feel like there is this moment of tension where we look at the fire elemental, like, imposing, kind of bearing down on this well-dressed warrior who is, like, nervously gripping their sword. You know, the shot's moving back between them. It's almost like a Kurosawa or an old Western where there's, like, this air laden with tension between these two who are about to enter battle. And then we hear a piercing, and dirt starts raining down from like on high to this fire elemental, and like it's dimming. It's like looking around, there's all this moist mud being flung up into the air, and finally, you know, dirt will charge with the, you know, ancient martial technique that is taught in Skolog's land, which is dropping and rolling. It's once you've mm-hmm. got the advantage over a fire elemental, you must snuff them out by rolling your body around on them. So that's exactly what he'll do.
Yeah, the dirt like rains down, and the light from the fire elemental definitely darkens, it dampens, it goes out a little bit, and then you just start rolling around on the ground. There's an awful lot of confusion. It's hard to tell what expression is on a fire elemental's face. It does seem like it might be going, ouch, huh? The elemental and the figure has definitely noticed you. What do you want Sarah to be doing in this fight? They can absolutely be assisting you.
Yeah, I think Sarah, like, what we do is engage in noble Skolagian combat, which is don't let them know how many of you there are until it's too late for them. So this is just one of those things where Sarah is like kind of hanging back, looking for a moment that they might need to like step in, intercede to the fight, and take advantage of our opponents being unaware.
Okay, so Sarah will be doing that. And the other figure, so I'm going to make a luck roll for this other figure. Would you like to pick high or low?
Low, always. It's got to work out eventually.
So this other figure looks at you, is obviously very surprised, but seems to get like a little bit of courage. They drop the sword, raise their arms, with the cape, like, billowing out. And they make a sort of motion with their hands of a flame rising and then falling, and bring their hands together. They look really confident.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing seems to be happening.
One of these days. One of these days it'll work out.
Yeah.
Stay away from the rich kid, you foul beast.
The foul beast rears up, like, shaking as much as it can to get the dust off, and goes for the, like, rushes for the kid, or, like, lets out a flame, part of it, towards the kid, who just manages to dodge, but their cloak is now aflame.
Oh, okay.
They're looking pretty panicked.
Yeah.
What would you like to do?
I am going to recite the ancient battle poem that Skellig wrote about the defeat of the fire elementals at the border, you know, 3 years ago. We did mm-hmm. establish that they're 13, so this is a fight they had with their older brother.
They were 10. Yeah. Very precocious wizard. Yeah.
And then I totally dropsteth to the ground, and mine trousers were extinguished. So say Skellig, powerful wizard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm definitely using my knowledge of history, and I'm probably going to be, this is like a face, and I'm going to put my heart into it, because
absolutely
reciting the great history.
I'm going to say that your target number here is probably just a 6, to be honest, because, go on. It's clearly relevant to the kid.
Okay, thank goodness. 17.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's technically a critical success, because it's over double what you needed to get.
All right.
So this kid, like, absolutely hears you, face lights up, drops to the ground, rolls. And as they are doing that, the fire elemental will, like, turn to look at you. And as it is turning and confused, I will let you go again one more time.
Okay. This, I'm going to, you know, grip my shovel tight in my hand, and I am just going to, like, beat on it like you're trying to beat the fire out of something. But critically, what I think I'm doing is providing the distraction and an opening for my good friend Sarah to come in and heroically end the fight, as is appropriate and befitting the station of a knight.
Of course, of course. Okay, I will ask you to roll me a fists, and you've got, I'm not going to say you've got the upper hand anymore, it definitely knows that you're there, but you've got mm-hmm. your shovel, so that would be a 12, and then you've got Sarah, which would be a 9.
Okay, and I gotta put my heart into it. There's no choice here. Oh, ooh, I got my first explosion of the game.
Ooh!
On the 6.
So go ahead and roll that
6
again.
6 plus 4. So the total there is going to be 18. A 6 and a 4 and the 6. And
nice.
An 8 on the 10.
So that is, again, a critical success. You got double what you needed. So, you just, like, launch at it. Please describe how this goes down.
What I think it is, this is a reverse Melvin. And those who don't have, I think I've heard it be called, like, stool or something, or bench. I listened to Sonic the Comic, the podcast, and I know they have described this action in the UK. I don't know what it is, but it's when it's a prank that cruel children would play on each other, where one of them kind of, like, bends down and gets behind somebody, and another person will push them over that person.
So
I charge at this elemental and immediately curl up into a ball at its feet. It looks confused mm-hmm. for a second, and then Sarah comes straight from behind and, like, knocks it over, and the two of us immediately stand up and start, like, kicking out the fire.
Nice.
This episode of One Shot features music from the following artists: Lauterbrunnen by Cody Martin, Each Step by CJ Zero, Darkness Approaches by Louis Lyon, Darker Days by Alternate Endings, The Fun House by Moments, and Fine Dining by Dresden the Flamingo. This episode of One Shot was edited and sound designed by Tracy Barnett. You can find more of their work online, anywhere, at The Other Tracy. Well, that's it for One Shot this week. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with part 4, the finale of Pitcrawler.
The history of role-playing games is weird and wild, and we here at System Mastery are determined to look through it all.
Every heartbreaker that drove a man to bankruptcy to see his vision of D&D with really specific armor maintenance rules come to fruition.
Every game where you get increasingly certain as you read it that this is all just one person's weird fetish.
Every system that painstakingly recreates how medieval life was really like, and then also you can cast Fireball.
The System Mastery podcast wallows in the filth of RPG history. Come!
Join us in the muck
at System Mastery.
As always, we finish One Shot off with a call to action. And as I mentioned briefly in the mid-roll, it's Pride Month. Across the nation, across the world, there is legislation, there is oppression against LGBTQIA plus people everywhere. I would encourage you, yes, do the thing that we always talk about, call your representatives, all of that, use 5calls.org. I would make sure that you are reaching out to the people in your lives who are affected by this stuff. Make sure you're taking care of each other. Make sure you're looking out for each other. Donate to mutual aid funds if you're able to. Donate to nonprofits and do it locally. Yes, a lot of the national nonprofits are fantastic, but your own community is where your money can have the greatest impact. Thanks, heroes. If you enjoyed this show, you should check out some of the other shows on the One Shot Podcast Network. Shows like Design Doc. Join hosts Hannah Schaefer and Evan Rowland as they redesign their first role-playing game, Questlandia. Design Doc is an experiment in public participatory analog game design. It's fun, it's messy, and you're invited along for the ride.
As always, a humble and hearty thanks to our supporters on Patreon. If you want to help us in a non-monetary way, the best thing you can do is tell a friend. You can also leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Every 5-star review we get helps new people find the show. For the latest OneShot news, be sure to follow me on Twitter at OneShotRPG. Look us up on Facebook at facebook.com/OneShotPod, or look for news on the site at OneShotPodcast.com. If you want to inquire about ad rates, live appearances, commissioning episodes, or you have a general question or comment for the show, contact us at gamemaster@oneshotpodcast.com. One Shot is a production of the One Shot Podcast Network, in association with Paracosm Press. Paracosm Press is a Chicago-based tabletop games publisher. You can find more information at paracosmpress.com. Finally, that music, which is right now swelling up over my voice, is Adventure by Be Your Own Pet, courtesy of Infinity Cat Records. See you next time, heroes.